Is there a way to make schools more safe? Come to the School Safety Seminar, featuring Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. Colonel Grossman is a military and law enforcement trainer, psychologist, and author of 6 books. The event is September 14th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Sheraton Crescent Hotel in Phoenix. Tickets are only $50. Available at azcdl.org. Click on events. That's azcdl.org and click events.
The legendary voice of the Moody Blues, Justin Hayward. All the Way and More, August 18th, Fox Tucson Theater. Feel the wind of heaven blow. Justin Hayward, featuring Mike Dawes. Nights in white satin. Reserve seats on sale now at the box office or foxtucson.com. Justin Hayward, All the Way and More.
Inside Track. Santa Aurelia LLC is solely responsible for its content. The views and opinions expressed on Inside Track are those of the host and guests, and not necessarily endorsed by KVOI or its advertisers, but they should be. And now, here's Bruce Ash.
Hello, everybody, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. This is Bruce Ash welcoming you to a monsoon edition of Inside Track. As always, thank you so much for supporting our great Inside Track sponsors. Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, and Corazon Cabinets. These are great local companies you should do business with. Talking about companies you should be doing business with, Corazon Cabinets just received 2 new containers loaded with the finest product available. Corazon Cabinets is your locally owned source for high-quality kitchen, bath, and office cabinets at low wholesale prices. Joy, Kelly, and Jennifer can help you design your dream kitchen or bath area. Corazon Cabinets carries J&K. Conestoga, and now Medallion Cabinets. Come by and visit the showroom soon and see our displays of what your home will look like with a Corazon Cabinet. Call 488-2266 and let them know you heard this ad on Inside Track to get an additional 5% discount on Corazon's already low wholesale prices. You'll be amazed by the great styles and super low prices at Corazon Cabinets. I've spent a week in Charlotte, North Carolina, attending the RNC 2019 summer meetings. We did a lot of good work. The RNC is in great shape. We visited our 2020 convention venue, toured the many venues delegates next year will enjoy, and visited with the host committee and our RNC executives who are preparing for the best convention ever when President Donald J. Trump is nominated next August to a second term. It will be a really big show. Speaking of really big shows, and I mean a really big show, we'll hear today from Ed Ackerley, independent candidate for mayor of Tucson, for an in-depth interview on his race. Ed will join us in the second half of today's show. But first, we'll say hello to old friend of the show, Willis Lee, who is the NRA second vice president. Now, not that Willis is chopped liver, but he's brought along his boss, newly elected NRA President Carolyn Meadows, to talk about Second Amendment and the great work the NRA is involved in today to protect our rights and help Donald Trump keep America great, winning a second term. It's no secret the left is coming after our guns. Bloomberg, George Soros know, that if the right of self-defense is removed, the destruction of the rest of the Bill of Rights is not far away. Democrat socialists have sent a clear message through their presidential candidates and their de facto congressional leaders, their intent to gut the NRA as a means to win the 2020 election. They know that Donald Trump is their primary obstacle to their plan to turn America into another failed socialist state. I've known both of our special guests for many years. Carolyn and Willis both served at the RNC, and now as members of the NRA, are standing up for the constitutional rights of all Americans. They're promoting the shooting sports, and they train millions in gun safety across our country. The forces of dark are at work, but Willis Lee, a decorated Army veteran and former Hawaii State Party chair, agreed to stand with newly elected President Meadows to fight for the rights of responsible gun owners everywhere. The threat to our right of self-defense is under attack again after the tragedies in El Paso and Dayton. Not only has the left attacked the Second Amendment again, they now link gun ownership with white supremacist groups. Their grotesque attacks will not prevail. The NRA, our president, and Congress must work together to minimize the risk of future losses by enacting sound and constitutional policy that protects the public and the rights of responsible gun owners. Carolyn has come through the ranks for NRA leadership and is a well-respected member and respected also by Second Amendment advocates everywhere. Now, Carolyn is actually the third female vice president. She was also the second NRA president when she served an interim term as president about 16 months ago before Oliver North assumed his duties. Our own very popular and hardworking Tucsonan, Sandy Frohman, was the first NRA president. I've known Carolyn for years, and you could not ask for a stronger president than she'll make. Willis Lee will be her very capable ally. We'll return in just a few minutes after we hear from some messages that our sponsors have for us. So stand by for our exclusive first time ever anywhere interview with newly elected NRA President Carolyn Meadows and second NRA Vice President Willis Lee. Stay tuned. You're listening to Inside Track. We'll be right back.
Is there a way to make schools more safe? Come to the School Safety Seminar featuring Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. Colonel Grossman is a military and law enforcement trainer, psychologist, and author of 6 books. The event is September 14th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Sheraton Crescent Hotel in Phoenix. Tickets are only $50. Available at azcdl.org. Click on events. That's azcdl.org and click events.
Welcome back to Inside Track. Our guests for hopefully the next 2 segments are my old friend, former RNC member and retired Army guy who just has had an incredible career fighting for our country, Willis Lee. Also now, Willis is the second vice president at the NRA.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me on again.
Man, this is great. And Willis dragged along his friend, my friend, and former RNC member, now the president of the National Rifle Association, Carolyn Meadows. Welcome to Inside Track.
And I'm delighted to be here.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. We're here at the RNC 2019 summer meetings in Charlotte. And the NRA and the RNC have had quite a great working relationship over the years. And NRA leadership is frequently at the meetings here whenever the RNC meets because it's been a great collaboration.
This is true. Both groups are patriots. And by and large, we're all fundamentally out here to save the Second Amendment. That's why Willis and I are here. We want to shore up our feelings and make sure that all the RNC committee people are still with us. And after all, NRA has elected 2 presidents.
You bet.
Our mission now is to make sure in 2018 we get President Trump back in office, take over the House, retain the Senate, and we're already very involved in Virginia, as a matter of fact. And my friend Willis will elaborate more on what's going on in Virginia.
I tell you, it's been pretty exciting. Virginia had a special session this fall, which was all oriented on gun control, and some of it was to deflect from a Virginia governor who is embattled right now over his blackface controversies, a lieutenant governor who's had several sexual harassment charges brought against him. So to raise this special session all oriented on gun control was his idea to escape all of that. Well, the Republicans in Virginia slapped him down. And it's not a victory lap. We know there's challenging elections this fall, but the NRA and the GOP have banded together to make sure that we hold Virginia, both the House of Delegates and the Senate, going into next year's election for President Trump.
So the NRA has over 5 million members, and the Second Amendment is their issue. It's my issue. I'm a life member. My wife's a life member. I think both our sons are life members. And guns and Second Amendment, the right to defend ourselves, is a huge, huge issue for Americans. But it's also the shooting sports, which NRA is involved in. But let's focus for a second on 2020 election. There is going to be an incredible assault on the American voter. And we've seen it in the just recently completed DNC debates. There'll be a huge emphasis on taking away gun rights. And don't you think that Second Amendment really is one of the key issues in the 2020 election?
Well, it absolutely is. And for those who actually watched the show that's been going on for the last two nights, you got the clear sense from most of them. Their big aim is to disarm the American people. And after all, Bruce, that's what our country was partially formed on, the right to keep and bear arms. So our focus will remain, as it always has, to make sure that the hunters are going to be able to hunt, sportsmen can go shoot skeet, your wife and your kids, maybe they could become endowment members.
Maybe.
In fact. So, but I would also add to that, normally our membership dips in the summer months. Funds do. But I can report to you, our membership is still over 5 million. Financially, we're in good shape. And that's without any big major catastrophe. So we're in good shape, and I'm happy to report that.
So we had a little bit of a dust up last spring, and we're not going to necessarily spend time talking about that today. But the big thing is, it's clear that the membership supports leadership at the NRA. And the membership is expressing that confidence by continued giving to the NRA, membership holding, and that's a big deal. But also, the gun safety programs that go on all across the country. I think I remember hearing that you have 150,000 instructors across the country?
115,000 certified NRA instructors teaching firearm safety training and education every day across America. And in every state, the NRA program is certified to be considered for folks' concealed carry license and their ability to go hunting and otherwise. So it's a robust training program. We also now have passed 31 million children taught Eddie Eagle gun safety. So across the board, our programs between our competitions, our education, our training, and our youth outreach has just been robust.
And competitions up as well.
Our competition numbers are up. Now, I got to tell you, there's some folks that are working very hard in our general operations that have made a point to ensure that our competitions, which pretty much drives, just like any other sports competition, drives the rest of the agenda, getting people involved and competing. And now across the board, we're not just standing stationary target shooting anymore. We're heavily involved in three gun, two gun. There is a lot of activity and a lot of fun shooting out there.
The 2020 Olympics are coming up. Will there be competitors who have kind of come out of Eddie Eagle and some of the competitive shooting programs from the NRA who likely will be competing in the 2020 Olympics?
Actually, we have a sitting board member who is a gold medalist And she will be competing.
Pit Road is incredible. And this is six Olympics.
Yes.
I mean, started when she was 16. She's won a medal in every Olympic. That's a record. She's going back. She's at trials now this year. And she's just incredible. Not just with a shotgun, but she is also our lead plaintiff in our lawsuit in California. So she's stepping forward in all sorts of ways.
So the work that's going on at the NRA, a lot of it is advocacy work in legislatures around the country. And getting back to Virginia, what exactly were the things that NRA advocated for and the victories that you had in this past session in Virginia?
It was a special session, and the governor brought forth 9 or 10 different issues that he wanted passed in Virginia. And he thought it was a safe shot because there had been recently a shooting in Virginia. And it was a standard laundry list of Democrat talking points, from universal background checks, which don't work because we know this guy passed a background check, to banning what they call assault rifles, which we know doesn't work.
Right.
Because Clinton tried that, and right on down the list. And those were the issues that we had challenged the Virginia governor. But it's more than that, Bruce. This is a fight for freedom. It's about the Second Amendment and how the NRA gets involved. But this is really America's freedoms. And it's the Second Amendment, which guards all those other freedoms. And that's what's at stake in 2020 with the election for President Trump and holding the Senate.
So let's go ahead and take a break, and when we come right back, we'll be with NRA President Carolyn Meadows and NRA Second Vice President Willis Lee. Stay tuned. You're listening to Inside Track. Welcome back to Inside Track. Bruce Ash here with special guest, NRA President. I can't believe I got her on the show. That's awesome. Old friend Carolyn Meadows and Willis Lee, the NRA Second Vice President. Let's talk for a second as we come back from the break about concealed carry and the advances being made all across the country on concealed carry permits, licenses that have been taken out, and the importance for women's self-defense.
Oh, that's one of my very favorite subjects, Bruce. Yes. Even in my home county in Georgia, the concealed carry rate is up hugely. I've checked the numbers, and it's amazing how many women are actually applying. We have a program, Susan LaPierre, who heads up the group for women's leadership, and it has just taken off. It's only 11 years old, but the membership keeps continuing to grow. And now a lot of women, many, many more, are actually instructors. So it's huge. I mean, women want to be safe. They want to protect their kids. And we're out there in force.
Hey, bad dudes out there, listen to this. My experience is, and Carolyn, I'll ask you for yours in a second. My experience is females are generally much better marksmen, much better with firearms than men. There's a natural sort of a fluidity that I've noticed. And my wife, she got into the shooting sports because she was mugged in a parking lot. And she decided she wasn't going to take any crap anymore and never wanted to be placed in that position. And she bought a handgun. She learned how to use it. She went to Gunsight. She actually took 2 courses at Gunsight. And there's lots and lots of women all across the country. And with all of the folks that are taking self-defense and basic gun skills, what percentage do you think of the total numbers are females today? I mean, you talk about, you know, how many women are getting concealed carry permits.
In Georgia, I would say that it's 50%.
Wow.
It's huge. And like your wife, people are listening. And I would advise women, when they do go out to purchase a gun, most gun stores now, you can actually try out if you want a revolver or a pistol. And would advise anyone, whether male or female, learn how to shoot it.
This year, there's going to be some elections that are of importance. Let's talk about the Mississippi governor's race, the Kentucky governor's race. NRA is very involved in those elections. What's at stake? What's going on?
Both the current governors, Bevins and Bryant, they are huge supporters. And so Mississippi's got their race, Kentucky theirs, and the Virginia legislative races that we're going to
some replacement races.
Virginia's on a normal cycle. They have an off-year election cycle for their state legislators, not even at the statewide offices. But it is fun for us because earlier we alluded to the 5 million NRA members. But it's so much more than that, Bruce. There's 120 million firearms owners in the U.S. They're not all Republicans.
Say that again now.
120 million firearms owners who care about their firearm, but they care about their family's security and the security of their property. So they're all coming out. So my emphasis to all those folks is you don't have to be a Republican. You don't have to be a member of the GOP. You don't have to be an NRA member. But for your freedom, for your family's safety, you want to vote for that candidate who's going to protect your rights to own and use a firearm if indeed that's what you choose. Some of them are Democrats. So part of it is the hashtag walk away, vote the other way. But the other emphasis is just, even if you're not going to leave the Democrat Party, you want to vote for the person who's going to take care of your freedom in this next election.
And there's a lot of messaging that the NRA does on that, almost giving permission to people who aren't necessarily Republicans to vote their conscience when it comes to the constitutional rights, to Second Amendment, which is important to at least 120 million people.
And that includes First Amendment, too.
Sure.
And actually, Bruce, we strongly believe if the Second Amendment falls or fails, all the other amendments will be gone. And I would also mention to you, on our board, we have a lot of NRA board members. They've been hugely involved in politics, both parties. And actually, that's our strength.
It's a bipartisan board of directors.
Absolutely, yeah. It is. We have people that have been state chairman, and I was a national committee woman. So we are very multifaceted board, and we believe in civil rights. But just leave our Second Amendment alone. We're going to keep it. We're strong, and we will keep it.
Yeah, I want to throw one thing in there. Yeah. Carolyn and I discussed this earlier. We have a phenomenal leadership team at the NRA right now. We are in full support, not just of the leadership team, of the board of directors, but with Wayne LaPierre and what he has built within the NRA building right now. A lot of changes in this last month, and it's incredible the positive change that's taking place right now, and it's nice to see such a team working together.
There probably aren't very many men or women in this country who operate an organization that every morning when they wake up, they know that they have to raise $1 million a day to keep in place all of the various activities of the NRA. It's an incredible job. It requires special skills that very, very few people have.
Special skills and a special commitment. This is not a 1 year, 2 year. This has been a 30, 35 year journey for Wayne at the leadership of this for all that time. And we're blessed to still own our semi-automatics, to be able to go hunting with a rifle that has more than 5 rounds in a magazine. And it's all because of Wayne LaPierre and the leadership he's shown.
Carolyn, you've traveled the world and you visited, I remember, with a farmer in Australia, a rancher maybe, who there was a huge gun grab in Australia not long ago. And he actually had to do what to protect his firearm?
Actually, it was a very small sheep ranch, only 10,000 acres. Australia is a big country, and he said, welcome to our small ranch. My husband and I were there the year after they confiscated their guns, long guns, short guns, relics. And after our host finally figured out we were not with the CIA, at 1 a.m., he took us out in his Jeep, mind you.
Under cover of darkness.
Under cover of darkness. And way out back, and we started getting worried, is he really going to show us what's out there? Sure enough, he showed us how and where he had buried his long guns.
Wow.
And I think, Bruce, I'd even told you, those dingoes in Australia like sheep more than we two-legged humans do. So it's been a real impediment to them. And now New Zealand's doing the same crazy thing. And guess what? Crime rates don't go down. They still have crime. They use cars to run over
clubs
people.
And knives and ropes and all kinds of things.
And evil people will always figure out how to do it. So they cannot take away our right to Second Amendment.
So getting back to 2020, not just the Olympics,
yes,
but the big contest that's going to happen next year. The amount of money that's lined up. NRA obviously has a phenomenal fundraising operation, but the amount of money that has been pledged, or we think is going to be pledged, to beat a Republican is enormous. How do you combat, how do Americans who want to keep their guns, who want to have all their constitutional rights, how does the NRA help protect
We're
them?
We're smarter than they are, number one.
That's what I like hearing.
And Bloomberg has a lot of money. He does not have enough money to defeat the NRA. He's trying Soros, all of those bad guys. But what the people out there have to remember, even if you don't even own a gun, you will be impacted by it too. So you better line up and make sure that you get behind candidates in your state. And if you want to preserve freedom, you turn out for President Trump.
And if you turn out for President Trump, it also means turning out for U.S. elections. And in Arizona, we have a big U.S. Senate election because the president needs support for you know, making sure that these guys aren't running over the country, even if he does win. We have great representation on the NRA, Sandy Frohman, Todd Rathner, Don Saba, Buzz Mills. But how do you think the enemy, if you will, the other side, how do they perceive grandma?
That would be me, Bruce.
Yeah.
That would be me.
If I were them, I'd known you for a long time. If I were them, I'd be very afraid of you and the posse that you have. There's a lot of good men and women on the board, executives and colleagues at the NRA. They're going to have to work awfully damn hard to take away the Second Amendment next year.
Well,
you're ready.
I can tell you the grassroots people will turn out. They always have. It's the professionals that get lazy. Doctors, lawyers, you white-collared people out there, you're going to lose as much as the others do. So my admonition would be to the professionals, you better darn well turn out too. We've got a country to save. It's not just Second Amendment rights, but it's our country. And NRA will be there. You'll see us. We will be registering people to vote. We did that in 2016, made a huge difference. Like I said earlier, we elected a president, and we intend to reelect him.
That's right. Carolyn Meadows, Willis Lee, thank you very much for appearing on the show. It is an honor to have you both together with us, and thank you very much.
Thanks for having us on, Bruce.
Our honor, Bruce.
Is there a way to make schools more safe? Come to the School Safety Seminar featuring Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. Colonel Grossman is a military and law enforcement trainer, psychologist, and author of 6 books. The event is September 14th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Sheraton Crescent Hotel in Phoenix. Tickets are only $50. Available at azcdl.org. Click on events. That's azcdl.org and click events.
Welcome back to Inside Track. Our guest for the remainder of the hour is independent candidate for mayor Ed Ackerley. And Ed, it's great having you on the show. We had you on just as you were starting off your campaign. What are the things that you've learned being a candidate now and having got on the ballot? And congratulations to you. What's probably the biggest lesson that you learned on running a campaign for mayor?
I've been asked this question a number of times over the last few months, and I think it's the art of listening. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing process running for mayor and hearing the stories of people that have been moved into Tucson, have lived here all their life, or are new to Tucson, and they tell the reason of their coming here and why they want to raise a family here, why they want to start a business and work here. And I think that process, you tell them you're running for mayor and then they unleash a story to you about why they are love to be a resident of Tucson. So that's, I think, been the most important thing is learning how to be an active listener.
God gave us 2 ears and 1 mouth for a very good reason. The most successful politicians I've ever known, and politician to me is not a dirty word, Ed. And now that you've been a politician for a few months, it's not a dirty word to you. But being a politician is a really important thing, and the most important thing about it is listening. And that is a refreshing thing to hear from anybody who's running for office or who seeks office. And it strikes me, I know you were born here and raised in Tucson schools. You went to the University of Arizona. You could have gone anywhere, though, in the country, but you stayed here in Tucson.
I did have the opportunity a couple of times, one to go to Hawaii, of all places, another one to go to Southern California, got some job offers. And one time I went to Hawaii. I was there for 10 days with Roy Lallis, as a matter of fact, our former city councilman and a friend of ours. And we went there just to kind of get away, and I was deciding at the time as a young man whether or not I wanted to move away from Tucson or go to Hawaii or go somewhere else. And I just made the internal gut decision that Tucson was the best place for me to be, the best place for me to get married and raise a family and stay in the family business. And I think it was an excellent decision. It's really been powerful in my own personal life and my professional life as well.
So do you think it was the business part of it or Tucson the place, you know, the blue sky and the mountains around us and so on? What turned you on?
Well, I think I echo what I hear from my University of Arizona students when I'm down teaching at Biola College. We ask them in an exercise why they came to Tucson, why they came to the university. And without fail, the majority of them say that it's the weather and it's just unlike any other place that they've ever been. And they enjoy the fact that they can frolic around in their shorts in wintertime when their friends are in snow. So yeah, we do suffer a little bit of weather in the summertime, but it just is a beautiful climate to be in, and I just love the heat and I love the desert. It just draws me. I wanted to stay here because of that, and I'm also a U of A, wild U of A football fan, and I love Sabino Canyon and Mount Lemmon and all the beautiful things we have in Tucson. So it's just a great place to raise a family.
You know, Tucson people are a little different than most. I can always tell when I'm flying back into Tucson from someplace else. I can almost always tell the people who are from Tucson. We just have a certain look to us. And I think it's noble. I think it's a noble thing that anybody would want to do what you're doing, running as an independent candidate for mayor of the city of Tucson. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, the most important lesson that you learned is listening. Good
you know,
on you.
I like to tell people that I'm not running as a Democrat and I'm not running as a Republican for a reason. I'm a Tucsonan. I've lived here 60 years. I've raised a family and I got some grandkids. And my reason for running is, what is the legacy that we as leaders, we as people who have a moment in time here, what legacy are we going to leave for my two grandkids, age 7 and 5 now, but when they're 57 and 55, what are they going to say when they talk about their grandfather, talk about the life that they had in Tucson for the last 50 years? Do they have enough clean water? Do they have an infrastructure that can get them from one side of town to the other with probably double or triple the population? Are they safe? Are the roads good? Is there economic development that has happened that makes the growth manageable and meaningful? So I think that's a good reason to be a Tucsonan and not to be, this is a municipality. It's not a federal position. It's not a state position. It's a community position, and that's why I'm running, is to just offer up my leadership and see if the community wants to have someone like me run the city council.
So you've been doing this now for the last few months. As I said, you're qualified as a candidate. What are your top three goals when you become mayor of Tucson?
Well, I think the first and foremost is to have a safe place to live and work, and that means public safety. That means police and fire. We have to hire more police officers, and we need to sustain the work that the police and fire do in such a way with the budget to create an important legacy for them. They're operating on 1988 staffing levels, and that's just not fair to the professionals that we have here. We're not able to pay them as much as some of the municipalities up in Phoenix and other areas. We just got to do better by them. We got to get them more people, and we got to get them more equipment. The second thing is fix our roads. It's the number one thing that I hear from constituents when I'm out talking with them. The very first thing they talk about is, what are you going to do about our streets? And when you think about it, we may not all call 911 very often. We may not necessarily even go to a park, which is one part of our city charter, to take care of the parks and make them safe and clean. We all drive on the city roads all the time, and it's just right in our whole neighborhoods. We need to make sure we make a commitment over the next 10 years or so to take the money that's been allocated and find new money, and let's fix these roads once and for all. And third, to drive all of this, in order to get police and fire, in order to get these roads, we have to make sure that our economic development is in the right shape that it needs to be. And you know, we've done fairly well, but you know, Phoenix has far surpassed us. We don't need to be a Phoenix, but we need to be able to make sure that we're attractive to new businesses that want to form. But even more importantly, I think we need to take care of the businesses that we have here in Tucson that have been here for a while, and that we can help them grow their jobs in their own businesses. And if, you know, there's about 30,000 businesses in Tucson, and if, you know, just a small percentage of those folks added one more job, we'd be doing pretty well for the next couple of years. So that's my goal, is to make sure we have good police and fire, make sure that we have roads that are fixed and ready to go, and that we have a good infrastructure in terms of economic development.
So I know that when you grew up as a kid, you attended school out on the east side of town pretty much, Palo Verde High School, Carson Junior High. I think you were a Mother of Sorrows for elementary. And so are you still an east side guy?
I still am. My wife and I have lived out by Saguaro High School for the last 27 years, and I still attend the same church that I grew up in, a Mother of Sorrows. I was baptized there 60 years later. I'm still attending the same church. So I'm kind of an east side guy. But I've been around Tucson. I know it pretty well. I know most of the areas of Tucson, having lived here all my life. It's amazing how many people I do know when you run for mayor. It's amazing how many of those come back from the past to greet you. I can't tell you their story.
So being an East Side guy, you know, living out on the East Side for the last 27 years, is the East Side what it used to be? You know, Tucson's East Side used to always be referred to as the fashionable East Side. Is it a place that you think people still feel safe? Do you feel safe living there all the time? How do you think police and fire protection is out in your neck of the woods?
Well, I would say that, you know, I would gauge that with my wife. When we first moved in there with little kids, we did feel safe and we did feel like it was a nice area. In the last year, we've gotten security system for the house, and I think that is my wife. You know, it's a different where we live. It's a little just different than it was. It's not like it was where we all felt safe. And, you know, nothing against the police. They're trying as best they can with the resources that they have. But you know, we've had some crime in our neighborhood, and they just can't respond to it. Like someone shows up and hands you a blue brochure and says, maybe you'll find your stuff, maybe you won't. There's not much we can do to help you. And that's just a factor of not having enough resources and enough people. And so I would say, yeah, I'm not that I'm feeling unsafe, but I just think it is different than it was when we first moved in here in the early 90s. It's a different kind of an atmosphere. And I think people want to change that. I think people want to see some police officers on the street and have them respond quickly to the needs of the community, and we just got to get them the resources to be able to do that.
Yeah, and I think your message is very important. The men and women of law enforcement here in Tucson, on the Tucson Police Department, they're all brave people, and they care about their jobs, but there just aren't enough of them and not enough resources for the things that happen here today. So let's go again. You know, we're going to pick on your East Side neighborhood. Roads today versus roads, you know, let's say 5 to 10 years ago. Is the city keeping up? I know that there's a whole big road project out on East Broadway in the Camino Seco area headed east. I know that there has been a bunch of work done on Speedway. How about in your neighborhood?
Well, I do live right there by that Broadway Camino Seco interchange, and it has been going on for some time. And that's another thing that I think we need to work on is, you know, our road projects seem to take forever. And not that, again, I don't want to compare us against Phoenix, but when you get to a larger metropolitan area, it seems like they're working 24/7, day and night, and they knock out the road repair as fast as they can. But in our case, again, because of resources, it seems to take forever to do something. Well, that has a kind of many effects on it. One of them is really important, obviously the inconvenience to the people that live around the road construction, but the businesses that are on those streets that have to delay growth. And it's just, I've been consulting with many companies in many different areas of the city through my advertising agency who have to contend with road construction. And part of that is because we haven't done anything for so many years, they get in such disrepair that we have to actually go in and almost rip them all up and start over again. And that costs money and it takes time. So it is a conundrum, and it is quite a problem, I think, that we have to look at from a macro level and say, how are we going to make sure that this doesn't happen again, that we get these roads repaired and that they stay on a cycle so that they don't fall into disrepair like they have in recent years?
So, you know, being mayor of the city of Tucson is a lot different than being mayor of another city or being governor of a state or president of the United States. There's only a limited number of things that a mayor of Tucson actually does because of our council city manager kind of structure. You know, Jonathan Rothschild, you know, I have to hand it to him. He hasn't been a mayor that sat behind the desk all the time. You know, he's out meeting people and he's in the community. What kind of a mayor? When you're elected mayor of Tucson, Ed, what kind of a mayor are you going to be? Are you an outside mayor? Are you an inside mayor? You know, are people going to see you a lot? How do you see your role as mayor?
Well, I do think that Jonathan has set a new bar for visibility. He's everywhere. He goes to everything, and if his calendar is open, he always tries to take the ribbon cutting of the meeting or the speech or whatever. I find that very admirable. I think I would be a little bit different. I would be more of a policy guy, where I wanted to let the city manager run the city, because that's his job, and he gets well paid to do that, and he is very capable of doing that job. I think what we need to do as mayor and as council people is to make sure that we're out in the community, in the city of Tucson, working on the issues that we can resolve and coming together to solve those issues. Again, police, fire, roads, economic development, parks, garbage, recycling, the things that are municipal in nature. We need to be working on that. And then, of course, the mayor has the bully pulpit of representing the city and being the spokesperson for the city and representing on the national level, state level, and, of course, locally. And so I do plan to get out and be pretty visible. I don't know if you've been following my Facebook page, but people tell me all the time, oh, my goodness, you're everywhere. I go to 4, 5, 6 events a weekend, out most every single day and night doing something. And I don't think that will stop once I become mayor. It'll probably be even more intense. So I plan to be out there, maybe not as much as Jonathan, but a significant amount of time.
But you have been listening for the last several months, and that is something that Jonathan did prior to running for mayor, and I think it served him well.
Yeah, I think listening is good, and you know, I've done the preparation too. I've visited every single department head in the city. I've been to the communications center. I've been to the water department. I've been out to the environmental services. I've met with the city managers, the assistant city managers, and obviously met with the mayor and the city council people. So I've done my homework on how city government works, and I've got a firsthand view of that. I'm ready. I'm ready for this challenge. I think that the city of Tucson, when they take a look at the options that are available, they're going to say that Ed Ackerley is as well prepared as he can be, and it's going to do a pretty good job. So I think I have a pretty good shot at this.
So let's talk for a second about an issue that's right in front of us, and that is this petition drive for sanctuary city status in Tucson. I know that the other candidates for mayor, and I think most all of the current city council candidates, oppose the sanctuary city. Are you a yes or a no, and why?
I'm an absolute no for a variety of reasons, the most important being economic. Not so much so that we would have risk state funding or that we would risk that type of sanction from the state government, and with Mark Fincham's new bill that they might pull some funding from us because we would usurp state law. But I think more importantly is on a national level, when you label yourself a sanctuary city, you're basically saying to a large group of people, perhaps half the nation, that, you know, don't bother coming to Tucson anymore. We're going to be this kind of a city, and we don't want you to bring your visits to us. We don't want you to bring your companies to us. That's just not in the good, best interest, long-term best interest of the city of Tucson. What we need to do is solve that problem that the initiative tries to address in other ways, like we have been doing as with the welcoming city that we are, and some of the things that both the county and the city have been doing lately. We can help assist the federal government in trying to create a process where these people are treated with respect and dignity. But labeling ourselves something that causes economic hardship for the city is not in our long-term best interest. I would rather do other things to help that underserved population than to do something that's going to be the long-term detriment to our community.
So if you're a volunteer and you're looking to get involved in a campaign and you want to be in Ed's army, how does one do that?
Well, I take a lot of phone calls personally at 520-850-7058, or they can log on to ackerleyformayor.com. My office is located at the Doubletree Hotel at Broadway and Algernon. We've been there almost 20 years, and I have people walk in my front door all the time and say, hey, how can I help you? That's the best way. Call me, go online, or stop by, and we'll be happy to talk to you about what our goals for the future are.
Well, and it's a campaign that really does involve both Republicans and Democrats, and, you know, Tucson has probably a third of our voters are either independent or party not declared. So, you know, it's a wide open race, and, you know, you're a refreshing voice. You are really a true community servant. I know you've been very, very active
in all sorts of things here in Tucson for many, many years. So thanks very much for what you're doing. We'll keep in touch with you. We'll probably talk to a couple of the other candidates as well as time goes on. I'm glad we had a chance to get caught up with you. And until then, when we meet again next week, you're listening to Inside Track. Thanks for supporting our sponsors, Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Corazon Cabinets, and Tucson Iron and Metal Retail. Until next week, this is Bruce Ash wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon.